My dad spent 23 years in prison. He started off as a Cuban revolutionary and later ended up a convicted felon in the United States. We only talked once in the last 16 years. Then, out of the blue, I got an email from him. He wrote, "I'm home. Your biological father, Hector." We didn't have a lot of photographs or stories about my dad, so I decided to go visit him and bring a recorder. I wanted to have something of him to hold on to. I felt I had to move quickly in order to capture him. In my mind, he could end up back in prison again, or simply disappear, or even die. I wanted to bring his voice home to my brothers, Hector, Carlos, and Danny.
So, the escape. We got it.
For instance, here's my dad telling me about his attempt to escape the L.A. County Jail after he's picked up on bombing charges in 1972.
So we start sawing through the windows. We put some soap. We put some dirt. While the guards are over there, they don't know what we're doing. We're cutting through this window. We put some soap. We put some dirt.
Sometimes my dad is a little hard to understand because of his accent. And to make things worse, I never recorded anyone before and was shy about putting the mic too close to him.
And we are ready to cut through the last window. And here they come and call my name next day. Hector Corrala, yeah. Back up. You're leaving for Chino.
We didn't grow up with a lot of facts about my father. It was more like myths. We all believed he was a revolutionary hero. If you listen closely to our exchange, you will see how embarrassingly real the myth of my dad was to me, even as an adult.
You know, I am violent.
You're bionic?
Violent.
Oh, God. I bet you said bionic and then violent. You're violent.
Yes.
You're violent.
Yeah.
What's the most violent thing you've done?
Oh, we don't want to talk about those things.
So they're pretty bad.
That may have been hard to catch, but I thought my dad said he was bionic, not violent. It's so clear in my voice that it was entirely within the realm of possibility that he was bionic. But I wasn't alone in this myth. The myth was part of our family folklore. And you can hear, my father likes the myth too.
But I have just told you, I am a superhero. You don't believe me?
I don't believe you because I know that's not true.
It is true.
Nobody is a superhuman.
I am a superhero.
In your own mind.
In my own mind, yes. I am a superhero in my own mind. That's where I live. This is my reality. You might not see it that way. But that's the way I see it.
San Quentin must have been scary.
It's nothing scary. It's not. Criminals all want to do right. Criminals want to be straight. Criminals have, you know, the same ethics that people have.
No, it's different.
It's different because...
The hierarchy is different. The ethics
are different. No, the hierarchy is there.
The hierarchy is different, but it's there, but it's different.
I sound like I've been in prison all my life, like I'm an accomplice. But when you grow up a kid of a long-term incarcerated prisoner, you do feel that way. Children, like my brothers and I, take an invisible journey into prison, and it's a journey that nobody acknowledges. I can hear in my voice that I want him to see that I was in prison. I was on the cell block too.
But when you walked into San Quentin, you were nervous. You're just playing it off that you weren't. But it's not true. I know it's not true.
There were dark moments. There were dark moments where your mind plays upon you. But it's not what you think. It's not as dangerous as you think. It's not as threatening as you think. It's not.
You're not just saying that to me.
I'm not saying that.
But there were times when you were scared.
Experiences.
Okay.
They were not scared. I wasn't scared. People are
scared. I was scared for
me.
You. I was scared for you.
As a kid, I imagined that the most difficult moment in my father's life was when the judge sentenced him to 30 years in prison. I used to revisit that scene in my head, play it out, how he must have felt as he looked at the jurors, him walking off in handcuffs and regrets. I asked him how he felt in that exact moment. I wanted to know if he was as devastated by a 30-year conviction as I was.
Were you scared? Were you...
No.
Were you sad? Were you upset?
No. I wasn't neither scared nor sad. I was nothing. It's just the next step in my life. The next step in my life. No big deal. I see where you can't grasp this concept. The medals of a revolutionary are prison and death. These are the medals of a revolutionary. So to me, 30 years in prison was a medal.
So you were smug. You were probably feeling like, oh, this is my badge of honor.
There you go.
How long, when you're wearing that badge of honor, does it kind of disintegrate when you're
Never.
In prison?
Never.
That's not the answer I hoped for. My expectations went more like this. I thought we would share a nice bonding moment here. We were supposed to reveal this deep concern about one another's welfare over those 23 years. Like the way a family's love should transcend prison gates and time. I figured we'd give each other a nice hug at this point. And at the end of our meeting, I would take this recording back to my brothers and they would all melt. But our conversation doesn't go that way. Instead, my father tells me he wished he told the judge.
It's too little. 30 years is too little. If I were you, I would give you life.
Really? You thought?
Really. 30 years was nothing. I don't know what he was. He was a fool. The judge was a fool.
This is officially the worst reunion in history. It seemed to me, although I had no idea how bad it was going to get, our conversation couldn't get much worse. So I switched gears and decided to ask him all the questions I've ever wanted to. My father always maintained he didn't detonate the bomb, which was the crime he was convicted for. And I finally get the chance to ask him the question that our family never talked about. Were you guilty?
I'm sentenced for detonation of explosive in a place of business in Los Angeles. I do
a
couple
of
years
over
there. I'm not guilty of the elements because I did not place the bomb that they charged me with, but I'm guilty because I am the one that is teaching them how to place the bombs, and tell them where to put them, all that. So I'm guilty.
To hear him take responsibility for the crime tells me that he's being real with me, at least in this moment. I figure this would be a good time to ask about my mom. She never talked much about him, and I wanted to know about their relationship.
They're still, we always love her, and she'll always love me, because we were young, and we were in love, and that's a lifetime love that lasts forever.
My mother met my father in Miami during the 1950s, when they were both teenagers. They fell in love and moved to Havana and married. After the Cuban Revolution, they returned to the United States and had four children. I always wondered how a man so obsessed with Cuba could have fallen in love with an American woman.
Castro took over the government, and I went back to Cuba and left Joan there in Miami. And she followed me to Cuba. And then we married.
Well, why did you get married?
I didn't want to, but she was pregnant, and all those Catholic... bullshit, and she want, those problems. I want her to have an abortion. I told her I wasn't a good husband, and I wasn't a good father, and I wasn't, But she wanted to have a baby and have a marriage and all that good stuff. And that happened and happened and over and over, and I would go there and disappear and spend time. And she spent 10 years of that terrible life where I would go, have it pregnant, and disappear.
As I listen to my father describe how he wanted to abort me and my three brothers, I feel like I'm floating outside my body. There must be other parents in the world that considered aborting their children. But parents don't tell children these things. My father doesn't think twice about telling me I was unwanted. There is no pause before he tells me, no hesitation after. The fact doesn't flutter around the room like a long-buried secret. I think how strange for him to have this exchange with a child he didn't want. I can only imagine for him, this must feel like a small haunting from a ghost child.
You never came back to her. She was chasing you all over. You never said, oh, take me back, take me back.
Yes, I said, take me back, take me back. And then she would come back. And, and nothing has changed. And shift starts again. And I'm going somewhere. And I'm a bum. I'm an irresponsible man that did not care about anything but what I was involved in. And she didn't see it. And I told her 100 times.
100 times. That's a lot of times. I suddenly feel it's not just about my mom. It's our whole family.
I'm glad that she married again because I spoiled her life because I was terrible to her. But I tell you, this is already lived. We lived this. And we had our thing. And it, you know, what can I tell you?
I don't remember hearing the emotion in his voice when I recorded him that night. And now every time I hear it, it moves me.
So, what makes a man do that?
I have no idea. It was a turmoil time in my country. And I was...
Well, what makes you do that? It's turmoil for a lot of men, but a lot of men don't do that.
If you
had to live your life again, you'd want to spend 23 years in prison.
I wouldn't mind. It's not where you are. It's what you do with where you are. I am a role model. I am a role model for revolutionaries. And this is a different breed of people than home folks. Home folks are something else. These people are loving in their home, they're with the children, and they're there when they get sick, and they're there when they have to go to school, and they when they have their shots, and then they're there, and that's not me.
What do you think the qualities of a revolutionary are?
Qualities of revolutionaries. Three qualities of revolutionaries: selfless, dedicated, and willing to give it all up at a moment's notice.
That sounds like my mother.
Dear Janine, how's my beautiful daughter? I hope that you had a nice Christmas. I must ask your forgiveness for not answering right away. But as I told your siblings, I have been away from the office, and there is no place in this prison I can write a letter peacefully. I must tell you that I miss you very much. Here in the prison live many cats. They grow up by themselves. We only feed them occasionally and never take them to our living quarters. This is not allowed, of course. Some kittens are wild, and some are friendly, and some are half wild and half friendly. There is one particular cat of this last type that reminds me of you. She resembles your personality as I remembered it. I call her Janine Marie secretly, of course, so other people don't know that I'm lonely and that I miss you. Funny how sentimental your dad can be at times. I hope you don't resent that I've compared you with a kitten. It is meant to be a compliment. Well, Janine, my love, there is not much more that I can tell you at this time. So I will be a bore and tell you to be good and to behave. Hope to see you next summer, perhaps. Love, H. My My father was born the only son of a Cuban revolutionary in Havana in 1938. I look at family photographs hard. I get in close. I think about the moments that bookend the frozen looks. I used to do this. I used to look for clues about my father's life in the few photographs I have of him. Wondering about his relationship with his parents, his upbringing in Cuba, and the myths that shaped his life. Recently, I picked up a book called Cubans in America. Inside was a picture of my grandfather and father in jail. The caption said that U.S. authorities arrested them in 1958 while attempting to sail to Cuba to overthrow Batista's government. My father has a hard time recalling the exact charges from 45 years ago.
The charges were violation of the international law, you know, an international law to, you're not supposed to go invade another country from here. That law.
Right. That's against the law.
You cannot invade another country from this country. That's against the law.
In this photograph, my father has his hand on his father's shoulder. He's 17 years old. His face is hidden in the photograph by his dad's profile. I wonder if you didn't know that they were father and son, you might miss the small tenderness in the hand, the way they are standing so closely. Or maybe that's what I want to see. Maybe someone else would clearly see my father hidden in his own father's shadow.
Abuelo was a man. He was, you know, he was a great patriot and a great revolutionary and very strict. And he was my worst enemy. I came with him when I was 17 years old. I came to exile with him. And we went to train as guerrilla fighters in Dominican Republic in 1956. And he was one of the commanders. And he made my life pure hell.
Why is that?
Because he would pick on me all the time. I would have to do all the dirty work, and I would have to work harder than anybody else. I never had no recognition.
How do you think he felt when you went into prison with your badge of 30 years for being a rebel?
I have no idea, you know? He's not judgmental, I don't think so. I don't think he was judgmental. I think he took it as, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but I don't think he...
This is the first time my father has trouble expressing himself all night. He's stuck. He struggles to find the words about his own father, even 20 years after his dad's death. His voice gets gentler, like a boy.
I don't think it upset him or bothered him. He knew, you know, that that's the way it is because, you know, he was a revolutionary. I don't know because he was my father. So I guess he might have been sad that it happened to me. And maybe even mad that I made it happen to me. I didn't follow his teachings. I was more dishonest and basically a rogue. You know. He was more decent.
I try to imagine my grandfather and father sitting in a prison yard together. I remember meeting my dad for the first time in a prison yard. Those trips always felt important and special. It was like going to church. I got all dressed up. I was really looking forward to reminiscing about those visits. I know that might sound strange. Most people recall family vacations or camping trips, but prison was our common ground. And I wanted to go back over all the little details. The first thing I wanted to know was his impression of me.
And then I remember walking in for the first time. Do you remember seeing me in that prison yard when I was 5? Or do you remember meeting me?
No.
That's terrible.
Terrible.
My father and I don't seem to have one shared memory. And every time I show him how he's impacted my life, he shows me how I've been erased off his. I feel like we're circling around a story that's disappearing as quickly as it's written. It's like writing on stained glass.
You know, you people were not real, were not into my life.
When you say your people, what do you mean?
You or my mother or my sister or my family. They were not in my life. My life was 30 years in prison. But there was no, like guilt or desire to go with you or nothing like that. Or no missing anything, because there was really nothing to miss. Because I was irresponsible and, not at all a father or a husband or a son or nothing like that.
So what did you think when you saw us, your children? What were you thinking? Were you thinking, who is this strange person, little person?
No, I knew there was you, my daughter, and I know my sons. And I couldn't do nothing for you. So what's the use of, having, I wish I was there. I wasn't there. I was where I was.
He asked me what I thought of him during our prison visits. It was one of the few questions he asked me all night, and I sensed it wasn't easy for him, because he jokes that I probably didn't want him as a father.
And what did you think?
I thought I was nervous. I was like, I was nervous.
I don't want this, Dad.
No, I was nervous to meet you, because I had never met you that I could remember. So, and I thought,
I remember you with your kinky hair, with your hands thrown up from the crib, asking to be taken. That's my memory of you, and that's my first memory of you.
Very nervous to come in to meet you, because I wanted to impress. I was afraid that you wouldn't think I was cute. I remember that being my, or you wouldn't think I,
What I'm trying to say is that I was afraid I didn't look Cuban enough. I looked Anglo. I didn't speak Spanish, and I didn't understand the culture. But what I really wanted to ask was, did he see himself in me? I'm afraid he'll say no. I'm afraid he'll say yes.
But it's really unnecessary, because it's just a blood thing. You are my daughter, I am your father, and that's it.
When I saw my father on this trip, he was waiting to pick me up at the airport. I recognized him from far away. It was the way he was searching the faces of the people walking toward him. It reminded me so much of our walks toward each other in the prison yards, not knowing what each other would look like in the sea of faces. It had been 16 years since I saw him on the outside of prison. I tried to walk slowly. I remember wanting to remember this walk. It felt like a gift to have a chance to walk toward him again in this life. He looked much more frail than I remembered in prison. Wide-eyed, ethereal, and beautiful in the way that people turn out to be as they grow older. We hugged for a long time, and I told myself not to let go first, to hold on, even if I wanted to let go. I could see that he was emotional, shy even. I saw none of the bravado I hear on this tape.
Having a parent in prison is a
handicap. It's a handicap for your development as a human being and a citizen.
Mm.
And what else?
I don't think it's a handicap necessarily having a parent in prison. I just think it's a very emotional thing for children, because you worry about that parent, if they're being abused or if they're being hurt.
But I have just told you,
I am not being abused. I abuse people.
Yeah, but I don't believe you.
To unravel my father's myth would be like taking off a bandage that we've been wrapping him in for 30 years. To remove it would force us both to see the cuts and bruises it protects.
I am a destroyer to rebuild. And just now I know how to rebuild. And I'm too tired to destroy.
These days, he spends most of his time working on building his garden, living a quiet life with his wife, Teresita. I find I'm relieved that he is looked after and loved by her. And I finally get up the nerve to say what I came here to say. I came to deliver a message on behalf of my brothers and myself. But hearing this exchange makes me cringe. The words feel so awkward, like broken teeth falling out of my mouth. Even though he tries to drown me out, and I crack and stumble over the word mattered, it's finally been said to him after 23 years.
But I understand what you're saying as far as goals for, you know, for Cuba, but I just feel like it was really ego-driven. It's about machismo, and it's about filling your ego, and you know, it was about being a hero in a movie in your own head, when the reality was abandonment.
That's
you
true.
Abandon things that really mattered, and
that's
their
true.
Futures.
That's true. But that's the way it goes. I'm not the only one, and I won't be the last one.
But you're the only
that's
one
the
to me.
Things I've done. I know, I am sorry. What can I tell you?
I hate
to see you suffer. I hate to see your eyes get all watery. I hate it. But this is all water under the bridge. And I am, you know, I'm sorry, but this is the way things happen.
For a second, I feel he sees me. And I see him as he is. I think back to the last time I saw my father in prison, 10 years ago. Prison visiting rooms are where the condemned and the abandoned enter to meet and examine one another. And like my father and me, they sometimes feel like they switch places. The condemned feel like the abandoned, and the abandoned feel like the condemned. When my dad walked out of prison this time, the part of me that stayed with him followed him out.
Are you happy?
Yes. I'm happy. Are you happy?
Sometimes.
Well, that's it. That's life.